Well, looking at space exploration and some of the benefits that can come from it, the modern world has benefited from space travel with the invention of things like memory foam, solar panels, cell phone cameras, and cordless tools as well coming from space exploration. But how can space improve the global economy? Now, the World Economic Forum says there's a great opportunity there of $1.8 trillion, an opportunity for global growth through space travel. Looking at this particular conversation, we're joined by Nikolai Kleistov, the lead of space technology at the World Economic Forum. Nikolai, how can the world economy benefit from space travel?
Hi, George. Thanks so much for having me. Indeed, this Insight report that we just released this week in collaboration with McKinsey & Company projects quite significant growth in the space sector, in the overall space economy, about tripling from the figure that we see today of just over $600 billion over the next 11 years up to 35. Now, this is happening across several different subsectors of the sector. Of course, we have kind of the traditional space activities like satellite manufacturing, launch services, cost of data. But actually, the real story here, while all this is growing, of course, the real story is about the data and what it enables. What is the space data, whether it's connectivity, whether it's positioning, navigation, or Earth observation, what does that enable? What kind of industrial activity does it make more efficient or provide great new services and new business models on the ground? So it's really the story of space supporting and driving economic activity across a number of industrial sectors on Earth.
Now, during the pandemic, we had, the space race and a lot of news headlines around a lot of billionaires looking to get into this part of the economy, whether through space travel or just launching satellites. How much of that has pushed up the economic opportunities that come with space travel?
Well, this has been significant, of course, and we've seen this transformation start to take place really about 15 years ago or so. And, because of these investments, and it's not just the single individuals, of course, we have several famous ones that continue to support and actively engage. But it's also interesting to see there's a diversification of investments. So it's not just about venture funds. It's also you start to see corporate investors coming in, even institutional investors such as pension funds, but also international new agencies, new countries participating. And all this together is leading to lower launch costs. This will continue over the coming decade, but also lower connectivity costs. And that helps to drive a lot of these activities, a lot of these business use cases in the coming decade.
What sort of business opportunities could come with this sort of space travel and the greater economic, mapping out of this $1.8 trillion by 2035? Is it only going to be in tech, or are there other opportunities to be picked up here?
Well, it's a good question. Really, it's across several fields. So we're really in the paper, we go quite in depth with a lot of analysis, but we essentially look at it in two ways. We have the core space activities, which I've referred to already, like satellites and launch, and those sectors will increase in some cases two or threefold. So think about civil and defense from the state-sponsored side. This will grow significantly. But then on the commercial side, communications. Think about in-flight, maritime, everything to do with cost of broadband. That's growing to a significant $200 billion plus. Everything to do with actual infrastructure. So think about actual manufacturing of satellites and rocket launches. Insurance is going up. We're going to have new business models of actually servicing, having to service satellites, perhaps refuel them in orbit in the coming 10 years. So that's a significant one. So all this is really driving the core growth at about 7%. And then there's this the other side of the story, right, is what are all these figures and services enable on the ground? And this is what we call reach. How is space reaching? And think about rideshare services. When you think about Uber, their business model relies and is based on positioning navigation, right, to connect the users with the drivers, right? Otherwise, you basically have a traditional taxi service, the food delivery, but also a similar story, but also more industrial applications in supply chains, et cetera. So this is all quite a significant rise. If you just look at that, that's about sixfold rise at 11% growth, up to 800 billion almost. And then you have on top of that connectivity, which is increasing as well to slightly lower figures, but in, you know, enabling everything from wearables to entertainment in remote locations, mobility services. Think about cars, connected cars in remote locations. Consumer goods that, you know, that you can purchase through internet. So this is all kind of part of that broader reach, a part of this overall space economy.
Let's look at the benefits now beyond the profit, beyond the economic opportunity. Of course, space travel comes with a lot of innovation. And as I was referring to it earlier on, we've had things like memory foam, Velcro that we've enjoyed and some of the gear that we wear and wallets back in the day. Cordless tools, the cordless drills have come from some of the work that NASA has done. But looking at the challenges that the world faces right now and into the future in the environment, disaster management, how can the space sector help to make sure that these are well managed?
Well, those are great examples that you mentioned, and there are countless others. And look, we'll have more of those cases, more tech that will be incredible for different applications on Earth as we start to go back to the moon with humans and perhaps beyond that. But you're absolutely right. The big story, and this is difficult to calculate in economic terms, right? But it is absolutely critical, and you know it's happening today. You referenced disaster management, mitigation, being able to monitor things like rising water levels and floods, perhaps combining with advanced artificial intelligence software to, you know, get to almost a predictive point, perhaps similar with wildfires. This is already happening now, but it's going to happen to a much greater extent in the coming years. This is on the disaster side, you know, so supporting emergency services. Of course, there is a climate monitoring aspect that you referred to. So you have satellites that are, you know, absolutely essential for monitoring and helping us understand the changing climate. They're going to get better. There are new missions planned. They really, you know, pinpoint, for example, methane leaks. So that's absolutely critical to monitor what's going on with the changing climate. And, you know, there are other use cases, of course, which are more in terms of supporting economic growth, and think about providing connectivity to remote locations where there is no terrestrial line. If you can do that and bring the costs down, you know, you're able to connect villages and the locations and provide education services, medical services, telemedicine. So things like that become really important, and you're able to connect everybody and bring everybody online, which drives, of course, socioeconomic development.
But we have to be careful here, because we've seen with any form of industrialization, any form of, innovation, progress that humans make here on Earth, there are things like pollution that comes with that. Is there a danger in terms of exploration of space where we could have maybe too many satellites up there with everyone trying to grab a piece of the opportunity?
Absolutely critical point you make. It is a big issue. So when we talk about congestion and debris in our orbits around the Earth, particularly in the lower regions, actually not too far away from where the space stations are currently, the two that there are right now, this is a big issue. And, the different stakeholders, private and public, are trying to think, you know, how do we get around this? How do we come up with better guidelines and standards, to deal with existing satellites that perhaps come offline? How do you start to think about servicing them? But also, how do you deal with all debris that's up there? You know, there are a number of, in the past decades, old rocket bodies and old satellites have just been left floating. And so every year we have kind of these near misses. Sooner or later, of course, there will be probably an accident. So it's a question of dealing with existing debris. It's a question of perhaps a mix of required policies and probably regulations at some point, but also sort of good behavior, following some existing guidelines that there already are there right now on the international stage, which, again, not everybody actually follows, taking care of your kind of trash, literally, once it's finished its useful life, and dealing with traffic. The traffic is growing. Number of satellites are growing. They're delivering all these amazing benefits. But we have to really make sure that we figure out this traffic system, which is quite complex. You know, these objects are orbiting at 27,000 kilometers an hour. You know, that's incredibly fast. So just the kinetic force of any small hit, you know, or collision, are really devastating.
That was Nikolai Kleistov, lead for space technology at the World Economic Forum, talking about the opportunities the global economy could get, about $1.8 trillion worth of opportunities that would come with space exploration into the future, but also some innovation that could help with things like disaster management and also keeping the environment safe here on Earth. Thank you so much for that conversation.